It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer Kent. Wisconsin is home to Poets Laureate, who are ambassadors for poetry in communities all over the state.
And now a Wisconsin Art Museum is launching a program to name a Wisconsin Cartoonist Laureate. The Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend is honoring Milwaukee cartoonist Paul Noth as its first ambassador for the art form.
The Cartoonist Laureate program is also recognizing Wisconsin's important role in the history of American comics. Here's a brief tour.
In 1917, Sidney Smith of Lake Geneva launched The Gumps.
Frank O. King of Toma followed with Gasoline Alley in 1921.
Dennis Kitchen founded Kitchen Sink Press in 1970, a pioneering publisher of underground comics.
Fast forward decades later, and Wisconsin remains fertile ground for comic artists. Paul Noth has published over 400 cartoons in The New Yorker. He was the 2025 winner of the Thurber Prize for American Humor in Cartoon Art. In addition to his comics, he is the author of a middle grade graphic novel trilogy. His first published collection of cartoons comes out in the fall. It's called I Am Going to Eat You and Other Awkward Truths, a Cartoonist's Romp Through the Lunacy of Our Times. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me.
What does the title of Cartoonist Laureate mean to you?
I'm not sure. It's a great honor. I'm very happy that they have a Cartoonist Laureate, and I'm honored and humbled that they chose me to be the inaugural one. And it's the only other state that has a Cartoonist Laureate is Vermont, which they do through the Center for Cartoon Studies, which is a great program that I've always admired. And the idea that the Museum of Wisconsin Art will be doing a similar thing here to, give a place for this art form in the state is, I think it's a fantastic idea. And I'm very happy they chose me for it.
What would you like to accomplish in these 3 years that you'll have this title?
Well, I think that it is to help promote and develop the art form in the state. That's the sort of the guideline. I think the main thing I want to do is sort of figure out how this position is going to do it, you know, to make this a thing and, you know, that people understand what it is and that it's a resource for young up and coming cartoonists in the state and also a way to honor the history of cartooning in the state, which is very impressive. So I hope to figure out what the position is as I go through it.
What is some of that history of cartooning in Wisconsin? Are there some milestones we should know about?
Well, definitely. Going all the way back, it has a great, just like Wisconsin's political history is very important to the nation, its early history of political cartooning is also very important. And then in the sort of golden age of strip cartoons, you know, some of the greatest ones were from out of Wisconsin and by Wisconsin artists like Frank King's Gasoline Alley, which was a real milestone throughout all those years. And then in sort of like the independent era and the underground era, Wisconsin was maybe the most important state because Kitchen Sink Press was out of Wisconsin, which was run by Dennis Kitchen. And sort of all of those great underground artists published through Kitchen Sink Press, including Dennis himself. And then like just throughout the years, like just, you know, I'm mainly known as a New Yorker cartoonist. And there are just a lot of other New Yorker cartoonists are from Wisconsin, including P.S. Muller, who's been doing great cartoons, I think, since the early days of The Onion. You know, it's just a great tradition. It's just, you know, I could go on and on. And then contemporary people like Linda Barry, Craig Thompson. It's a big, rich tradition that we have here. And I think it's fantastic that the museum has chosen to honor it this way.
You feel like you're in good company.
Absolutely.
I wonder, when you were growing up, did you race on Sundays to find the Sunday funnies?
Oh, absolutely. And literally every day.
Every day.
And growing up in Milwaukee, there was a great comics section in the Milwaukee Journal and then the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel growing up. It was called the Green Sheet. And it was, you know, it was literally printed on green paper. And that was, you know, my favorite part of the newspaper, my favorite part of the day. And I couldn't get enough cartoons and I read them constantly.
Where did your love of cartoons come from?
It's hard to say. It goes back from before I could even remember. They were just sort of part of my consciousness from the time I was a little kid. And I was always drawing them, too. Speaking of that newspaper, my father worked there. He was the movie critic and the feature editor at the Journal. Hmm. And so he would bring home, you know, cartoon books that came across the feature desk for me, too. And I never really expected to do it for a living, even though I loved it so much. I mean, he kind of warned me. He was like, this industry's in trouble. You don't want to go into the newspaper business, you know. And so I didn't think print journalism would ever be a thing for me. But that just happened to be the way that it worked out.
What did your first cartoons look like?
They looked like a little kid's cartoons.
Okay.
I think it was just, it was more like of just an interest than like an innate talent. You know, I was trying to draw like my favorite cartoons. I would be trying to draw Snoopy and Charlie Brown and stuff like that. And then now and then I would have my own little characters that would crop up. And those actually don't look that different from some of the recurring characters I have now. Funny little guys and dogs, a lot of dogs and cats too.
What were the curiosities of those characters? Were they shy? Were they troublemakers? What were they like?
Sometimes they were troublemakers. I always really liked sort of regular looking people in absurd situations. And I think maybe I got that from the Peanuts strip too, a little bit. Like, I like realistic characters. Mm-hmm. The situations can be very absurd, but I want the characters in it, whether they're human or not, to be relatable.
You have had published hundreds of cartoons in The New Yorker, and The New Yorker, and we rushed to them in our house. I mean, they're iconic, the single panel caption style. Is that your preferred format?
It is now. I mean, I wasn't, I kind of got into it. I never thought I could get into The New Yorker because I just grew up with such a knowledge of it and its history. And I knew it was the hardest place to ever possibly get into. So I never even tried. I didn't try until I met a New Yorker cartoonist. I was living in New York and I brought some of my other writing to a monthly show called The Rejection Show in New York because I hadn't been able to sell any of my writing at all. And so I, you know, this was a place where a live show where people bring in their best rejected material. And that's where I met a cartoonist named Matt Diffie, who's a great New Yorker cartoonist and children's author. And I showed him some of my work and he really encouraged me to submit to The New Yorker. And when you do that, they strongly recommend you do 10 cartoons a week. Mm. And then a very good week, you sell one. So it's a lot of rejection. But the discipline of doing that and to going into the single panel format, I really took to it right away. And it helped me focus. It limited my options. And for me, that is a great way to work. And so I've been doing it 21 years since then.
When you got your first one accepted, what was that like? What was that moment like?
I absolutely couldn't believe it. It was because it was from my first batch, you know, and it was some people submit for, you know, years, like literally like decades before they sell to The New Yorker. And I was just hoping that they would like them enough to invite me to come to the meetings. Like in those days, there were look meetings where all the cartoonists would get together and show the editor, the cartoon editor, their work. And then they'd all go to lunch and I'd get to go there. And I maybe, you know, I could meet George Booth or Sam Gross or Gayan Wilson, any of these great sort of heroes of mine. And so that was the most I was kind of hoping for. And then to hear I sold for my first batch just kind of blew my mind.
Hmm. We're talking with cartoonist Paul Noth. Through a program at the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend, he has been named a cartoonist laureate from Wisconsin. Many of your popular cartoons, they have a political bent. Some of them speak directly to Wisconsin issues like data centers, like gerrymandering. Has living in our politically active state, our battleground state in national politics, influenced your work?
Yeah, it probably has. I never thought I would do political work, and it doesn't seem like the work that I most want to do or that I most connect with. But going back to that first batch of cartoons I submitted to The New Yorker, I only had, of the 10 I submitted, only one was political, and that was the one that sold. And then the next week, I submitted 10 more, and only one was political, and that was the one that sold. And so despite my best efforts, I became a political cartoonist, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not that I'm not interested in politics. It's just that I can find it oppressive, you know, and just you almost want to turn it off sometimes because it can be a bummer. But I think it's a good percentage of the cartoons I do end up being political, and those are often the ones people respond to the most.
And in politics, it can be ugly. What do you see as the role of humor in politics?
I'm not sure. I don't like it to be in the ugly part of it, though. You know, I'm sure some of my cartoons can get a little bit rough, you know, especially if I'm feeling passionate about something. But I don't like them to lower the bar in terms of the discourse too much.
But how do you know? How do you know?
I really don't. Yeah. You know, I feel like I just go with the funniest idea and then see if the editors like it for the most part. If something's over the line, I think like my editors would probably pull me back, you know, and say, this isn't for us. But I like to give the other side the benefit of the doubt, you know, depending on which side of the issue I'm on. During the Obama presidency, I published lots of political cartoons, you know, and during the Bush and Trump years, the same thing. I just feel like it's my job to go with the funniest idea I have and an idea that is not the same thing everybody else is doing. I think that's the risk of political cartoons or topical cartoons in general, is you start doing the same stuff that's everywhere else, you know? And so if I have an original take on something, if I have a fresh perspective on something, I think that's worth doing.
Paul, I think editorial cartoonists, they could be a barometer for gauging the health of a democracy. Have you ever dealt with censorship or felt like your work was not being censored? And how did you approach that?
With The New Yorker, the best I can hope for is that they only reject 9 of every 10 cartoons, you know? And so it would be hard to claim that it's censorship because of that. It's just, they're just being very exclusive about stuff. And also, it's a great privilege to get to work for them because they're not really, even in a political climate where there's a lot of pressure for censorship, they're not knuckling under at all about anything. Now, they have their standards that aren't always the same as my standards. You know, like I might be willing to make a joke that they wouldn't be willing to make, but I think that's a little bit different than censorship, you know? And so I'm very lucky to have an outlet like The New Yorker or I've published other places like The Nation or Politico or The Wall Street Journal. And I usually feel like so far, it's not a question of censorship when my work is rejected.
Yeah.
But it certainly happened to my friends. I've seen it happen to a lot of people. And so the freedom for being able to do political satire is a barometer for freedom and democracy in our country. You know, and I have friends who work for late night comedy shows that are going off the air because of this climate.
Circling back to Wisconsin here, as part of your role as cartoonist laureate, you'll be teaching cartooning workshops for kids this summer. What kind of advice do you give to young cartoonists?
Well, one of my favorite exercises to do with them is we do a workshop where we come up with our own cartoons, and it's a lot of fun to do that with a group of kids. And I do this project with them that I call the Bad Idea Notebook Project. And that's based on the way I work. We have a notebook just says bad ideas on the front, and that lets you get, you know, it frees you up. You're not trying to be good. You know, you're just trying to write down and draw as many bad ideas as you can, which is literally the actual way I work. I just keep my pen or pencil going, write down thoughts, doodle pictures, and not worry about whether they're any good or not. And somehow through doing that, you plant enough seeds that something grows that you actually like.
So go for volume. Just keep those ideas flowing.
Exactly. Go for volume and most of all, be free and don't, you know, get over the inner censor. Stop shutting yourself down before you've had the idea.
I wonder where you draw inspiration from, or as you go about your day, what you might find a moment where you say, oh, yeah, I got to put that thought down, or I'm going to doodle that. Like, you know, what stands out to you?
You know, it's funny. It's like it can come from anywhere.
Okay.
You know, like it can come from conversation. It can come from a book I'm reading. I like to, in the morning, get up and just write down a couple of ideas, you know, just make sure and that is not because they're good ideas, but it's just to remind myself what I do and to turn my cartoon brain on. And then, like, you know, the antenna will be up and I will pick up on things in conversations or like little visual ideas will come to me and I'll be like, maybe that's something, you know, that's worth writing down. Because the thing about humor is that it's surprising when it works.
Yeah.
You know, so I have to sort of be open to it from anywhere.
Writer's block is a thing. Do you ever go through something like that as a cartoonist?
Yes. I think it's just because I've been doing it so long. Like, I've been doing it 21 years. And so sometimes I'll get up and I'll be like, I don't even know what a cartoon is anymore. You know, like they all, it's all so familiar to me. And the only way through that is to just do it anyway, you know, write down a bunch of ideas and be like, you know, the bad idea notebook thing again, you know, like, it's like, I know these aren't good, but if I play with them, if I let myself get a little bored, you know, it's just that I sometimes feel bored with it. But if it's boring enough, like, that part of my brain will start entertaining me, you know, or that's what I hope anyway.
Yeah. Well, Paul, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. This was fun.
That is Milwaukee cartoonist Paul Noth. Over the years, he's created hundreds of cartoons for The New Yorker and was recently named Cartoonist Laureate for Wisconsin through a program created by the Museum of Wisconsin Art in West Bend. And for disclosure, the Museum of Wisconsin Art is a business sponsor of WPR.